It is good to see everybody here. Turn to Matthew chapter 6. Since we had a devotional this past Wednesday night, we did not do 1 Corinthians, and so that gives me the freedom to speak on anything I want to talk about. And so you will often find me going back to the Sermon on the Mount. So we're going to be in Matthew chapter 6 today. It's good to see Charlie and Denise. It's good to see Miss Susan back again. And so I think that's our only visitors. We've got, you've been here enough times. You don't count as a visitor. When you come more than once, it is more than twice. Well, maybe three times. I don't know what it is. I don't know if we have a, we don't have a formula for that. So anyway, it's good to see you guys. Is it three? Okay, there you go. So you've been at least three times. That's good. All right, we'll get to Matthew 6 in a minute. There's a husband and their wife who attend this county fair. They're so excited when they get to the county fair. They see this old biplane, open cockpit, double wing plane, from way back in the day. And the pilot is given rides for $20 per person. And they're so excited because they've always wanted to have a ride. And it's supposed to be one at a time. So the guy's an old farmer, and he's like, $20 a piece, that's $40. I don't know if I want to do that or not. So he goes and starts negotiating with the man. He says, hey, look, I know the cockpit's kind of small or whatever. What if we went together? If we rode together, could we just pay $20? And the pilot says, no. He goes, I can't really do that. He goes, I will let you ride together. That's fine. He goes, there's room. He goes, but I just like to make the experience perfect for you. But he goes, I'll tell you what, I'll make you a deal. If you can get in this airplane and you can ride the entire time without making a sound, no screams, no words, no exclamations, nothing. He goes, when we get back down, I'll give you your money back if you can stay totally silent. So he's like, oh, yeah. So they're all excited. So the pilot's all excited because he's like, I am going to give them the ride of their life. So he takes off and he's like, he does these big sweeping turns and he does this, I forget what they call that one, where they go up and they stall it out and he comes back down. He flies upside down. He does loop-de-loops. Not a sound from the back seat. He's like, I can't believe that. So he lands and he's taxing. He's kind of talking over his shoulder and he reaches into his pocket and he says, here's your $40. He goes, I cannot believe you didn't make a sound. And the old man goes, yeah. He goes, boy, I'll tell you, I almost said something. My wife fell out, but I didn't say anything when she fell out. Priorities, right? That's priorities. I'm going to win my bet. Let's read Matthew 6, 19 through 24. Jesus is going to talk about priorities. I love this section within the Sermon on the Mount. He gives us some rules for living. He reminds us of important things. He reminds us of things of how we should do what we should do. And he gets to this section here, and he says, as a reminder, but he's talking about priorities. And I want you to notice how he mentions these in this order. He says, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust consume, and where thieves break in and steal. But, he says, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust consumes, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. So, if your eye is sound, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is not sound, if your vision's not where it needs to be, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, Jesus says, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. So you got three little kind of sections of thought where Jesus is saying, hey, I want to remind you of some priorities. I want to remind you of the things that matter the most. And I promise you, if Jesus heard my joke this morning, he would say, and it's not about winning a bet. It's about keeping your wife in the plane. It's about the important things in life, because where your treasures are, that's where your focus is going to be. I read an article from the financial, well, I read this article. It's talked about money stress and how widespread money stress is, especially in America. Financial firm John Hancock has a financial stress survey. It was released last year, December 2018, and they found that 69% of workers were stressed over their finances, with 72% of those folks constantly thinking about money and constantly thinking about money even while they're working. Just stress. Now, it's interesting. I mean, here we are in the year 2019, fixing to be in the year 2020, and we still stress over things that they stressed over back in the day. Now, here's what's even more interesting. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus talks about these priorities, about not laying up yourselves treasures here, about having your eye and your vision sound, and about how important it is to not have two masters. And then the whole next section of the Sermon on the Mount. In fact, the guys who decided the chapters and the breakup and where they break up ends chapter 7 with the final part of chapter 6. And all it says is, don't be anxious. Don't be stressing. Don't be worrying about what you're eating and what you're drinking and what you put on. Don't be worrying about tomorrow. Don't be worrying about all the stresses of life. Isn't it interesting that he talks about where our vision is and then right behind that reminds us why we have stress? Because you put your vision in the wrong place. So Jesus asks a heart question. Where do you store your treasures? And then he asks a question without really asking it. He asks, what are your treasures? What are your treasures? Have you thought about that? I mean, that's why I love Thanksgiving. It's a reminder of what our treasures are. I mean, the memories that we've created. I mean, Thanksgiving at our house, you go back to the basket house, you're going to hear the same stories. I mean, we almost wait for them to come up, you know, because eventually it's going to come up. My dad tells every single Thanksgiving, tells about white ketchup. He did it again this time. We were waiting for it. Karen and I were both like, when's it going to happen? He's telling somebody, he's like, yeah, I remember when we were traveling from Florida to Texas. Mike hated mayonnaise. He couldn't stand mayonnaise. Still hate mayonnaise and still can't stand mayonnaise. And we stopped and we got a hamburger and they put mayonnaise on the hamburger. And I was like, Dad, they put mayonnaise on my hamburger. He goes, oh, that's not mayonnaise. That's white ketchup. And I was like, okay. And so I scraped most of it off, but I eat it. And when we get through, you know, the punchline, my dad just kind of cackles and he goes, Mike goes, Dad, I don't like white ketchup either, you know, and just laughs. And I don't like white ketchup to this day. But I mean, the treasures that we have, I mean, it's amazing to me where we really put some of our priorities for the rest of the year. Then suddenly when we come around family and we start thinking about why are we thankful? What has God given to us? You know, is it just about the physical or is it more than that? I mean, we start thinking about spiritual things and we start thinking about family and people. I'm here to tell you, we're not taking anything with us, but everyone here can be with us. The people in our lives, those are part of these treasures. We all get to go someplace else. These chairs aren't going to go anywhere. You know, the microphone, the different things that we own, those treasures, those are temporary. Those are earthly. But people, even though we're earthly, we get to take some folks with us. We get to share our family. We get to go back and see those folks we haven't seen in so long. And we think of grandparents or uncles and aunts or those that we've lost in the past. Are you interested in the temporary or the permanent? That's kind of the Jesus question. Are you interested in that which is temporary or that which is permanent? Look at Proverbs chapter 23, verse 5. You go all the way back to Solomon. You know, Solomon was the wise guy in the funnest form of the word. He was asked of God, what do you want? He says, I take wisdom. And so in his wisdom book, he says, do not wear yourself out to get rich. And he's talking about physical blessings. Don't trust your own cleverness. Cast but a glance at riches, and they're gone, for they'll surely sprout wings and fly off to the sky like an eagle. I mean, they're here today, gone tomorrow. We talk about it all the time. You know, hey, you got a dollar burning a hole in your pocket, right? And you're like, well, you give somebody some money, and the ones that like to spend it, Boy, that money's just burning a hole in it. They can't wait to get rid of it. I love some of those terminologies. I like the Message version of 23:5. He says, don't wear yourself out trying to get rich. Restrain yourself. Riches disappear in the blink of an eye. Wealth sprouts wings and flies off into the wild blue yonder. I mean, he uses these terminologies that I was raised on. Oh, you know, just it's out in the wild blue yonder, out there yonder in places. What's more important, the wild blue yonder, or really what God has put in place for us? I mean, the temporary or the permanent? James Patterson, Peter Kim. I don't know if you guys remember this particular survey. They did it. It's been, if I guessed, I know I'd be wrong because it's been a while. But they wrote a book called The Day America Told the Truth. If you ever read this, if you haven't read this book, you should read this book. It's a lot of statistics, and it talks about kind of a pulse of America. And they revealed how far people in the United States are willing to go for money. They started with, what would you do for $10 million? They asked that question. And as people started, you know, changing their answers or getting to a point, they said, well, what would you do for $5 million? What would you do for $2 million? $2 million, the statistics are a little bit different. But here's what some people in America would do for $2 million. 25% would abandon their entire family. One out of every four Americans who told the truth that day said, for $2 million, I'll abandon my family. 23% would become prostitutes for a week or more. What? Oh, it's just a week or more. Yeah, 2 weeks. 16% would give up their American citizenship for $2 million. 16% would leave their spouses, which is still weird to me because I would think that fell under and abandoning their entire family, but I guess that's a different question entirely. 10% would withhold testimony and let a murderer go free for $2 million. This is scary. 7% of Americans said they would kill a stranger for a $2 million bill. Wow. That's telling. And then 3% would put their children up for adoption. Again, that seems to me that would fall under the first category of abandoning your family. But I guess 25% would abandon them, but only 3% would let them go up for adoption. So strange but true. $2 million. Yeah, you know, I decided if I would tell this story. But I remember this story. I don't know if it's true or not, but I remember hearing it when I was in England, so I kind of had a feeling it would be. But Winston Churchill one time was apparently in a conversation with a duchess, and she was a very beautiful lady, and Winston Churchill was known as kind of being a funny guy and very, very crass in his humor. And so he asked the woman if she would have an affair with him for £100,000. Oh, Mr. Churchill, I can't believe you'd ask me that, you know. Oh. You know, eventually she kind of says, well, yeah, maybe. You know, so he says, well, would you have an affair with me for £10,000? Mr. Churchill, I can't believe you'd ask me that. But eventually she says, kind of, yeah. And so he says, well, how about for £10? And she says, oh, Mr. Churchill, what kind of woman do you think I am? And he says, well, I thought we already determined what kind of woman you are. I thought we were negotiating a price. That has always stuck with me for 30 years. What's your price? I mean, what's the price that we're willing to pay to give up that which we consider more important? I mean, isn't that an interesting question? I mean, what are you willing to give up for something that's crucial? I mean, you go back to, you know, Esau and Jacob. And Esau gives up his birthright for basically a bowl of porridge, a bowl of soup. You know, that birthright was huge. We'd be saying the father of Abraham, Isaac, and Esau instead of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I mean, they got a double portion of Isaac's wealth, too. I mean, Isaac was the son of Abraham who got all of Abraham's stuff. And then Isaac got the stuff and then was going to give it. And you got a double portion. I mean, you're talking about thousands of thousands of thousands of dollars. And Esau's like, well, what good's my birthright going to do me if I starve? Yeah, sure, give me a bowl of soup. I've done that with teenagers forever. What word would you say? What would you describe someone who gave up $1 million for a bowl of soup? You know what the first word that comes out of the kid's mouth is? Mason, what would you say? What would you say? Trade $1 million for a bowl of soup. You don't know? Matt, what would you say? You would? Would you trade $1 million for a bowl of soup? If you're that hungry? Really? Wow, that's interesting to me. Every time I ask the kids, I say, well, that's stupid. I said, why is that stupid? Well, what are you going to do with the bowl of soup? I was like, well, and of course, I've done the illustration with you before. That bowl of soup might be important after about 3 weeks in the wilderness. You ain't had nothing to eat. And you go, I'll give you this bowl of soup. But that wasn't the case for Esau. Esau's just hungry. He just came in from hunting. And he trades it off. I mean, it mentions it in the book of James about just why would you trade heavenly bliss for anything down here on this earth? It's just a matter of priorities. Where's your treasure? And so you have these stories, you know. I love the Winston Churchill story. What would you be willing to trade eternal life for? Should we negotiate a price? I mean, is there anything that I would trade eternal life? That's what Jesus is saying. It's interesting because in Luke chapter 12, verse 15, it says, watch out. I mean, if Jesus is talking to you and he says, watch out, are you going to listen to a watch out from Jesus? Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. So you need to watch out what you're willing to trade. What we accumulate on earth is definitely temporary. It's interesting. He uses three phrases. Moths can eat it. Right? Don't lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust consume, where thieves break in and steal. So he talks about moths. I didn't know this about moths. I thought moths just came in and they ate your fabric. I don't know if you guys know this or not. Well, what moths do is they actually lay their eggs on the fabric, and then as the larvae hatches, that's what eats the hole in your fabric. It's not the adult moths that do that. It's the little ones, right? They're giving them the nourishment they need. That's why you'll see a moth land somewhere, and you're like, you know, I wonder if that moth will eat that. I don't know about you guys. I've done that experiment. It's like, oh, I'm gonna leave a moth laying on there and see where a hole lies. And then after a little while, the moth's gone. You're like, they didn't eat nothing. I don't get it. Well, that now I know. Right? So in Jesus' day, some of their wealth was tied to their clothes. Wool is, by the way, is one of the moth's favorite fabrics. And so wool clothing, clothes made out of wool and sewn with beautiful gold thread was considered one of the most valuable things that a person could have. They were also the banquet feasts that they would have. You had those banquet clothing, and you would have a special set of clothing just to go to those banquets. Rust can destroy it. When we think of the word rust, we understand that word. But in the Greek language, rust literally means an eating away, something that eats away at something that we already have. It's not just rust. It's a generalistic word. Another marker of wealth in Jesus' day was the storehouses full of grain. Jesus tells a couple of parables about guys. Hey, don't you count the cost first before you build a bigger barn? He tells another story about a guy that's deciding to build bigger barns and doesn't realize that night the Lord's going to require his life. And so there's a lot of that storage of grain. Mice and rats and worms and insects and disease could destroy those stored up grains, and that wealth would then become worthless. And then finally, thieves can steal it. You know, actual gold coins or coins of wealth, I mean, things that you can hold in your hand, maybe pearls or treasures like that. Well, they mostly lived in houses made out of mud. And what's interesting is in the day and time, if a thief knew where your stuff was at, CJ, they're just digging the outside of your wall and steal it out of your wall. You wouldn't even know they're digging and stealing your stuff. You didn't have to go into the house to steal it. You just dug to the outside of the wall. So that's why you had a lot of wealth was put in the floor or in the center of the house to make sure that nobody would put it there. And so you would make sure it was safe, so you put it in the middle, in the place you could guard it the most. Jesus is literally saying, what do you wish to guard the most? What's the most important thing to you? How are you going to store it up and to save it and to have it for the future? How or what is your treasure? Because where your treasure is, Jesus says, that's where your heart's going to be. And your heart is what I'm after. I mean, just like Marty just did in the communion thoughts. I mean, that nail into the heart of Christ was the more damaging. I mean, the nails in the hands and feet were certainly painful. But those who betrayed him, those who didn't want to participate in his grace and his mercy, I mean, that's got to be a damage to the heart. So it's a heart issue that Jesus is dealing with. Jesus reminds them, you know, there are eternal treasures, and they decide our judgment for the future. In Matthew 25, he separates the sheep from the goats. The separating factors are how you treat other people. When I was hungry, did you give me food? When I was thirsty, did you give me something to drink? He says, that's the treasure you need to lay up, because that's how you're going to be judged. So that's a deed. That's an action. Those are things that we're going to participate in. Look what Peter says in 1 Peter 3, 8 and 9. 1 Peter 3, 8 and 9. He says, finally, all of you, live in harmony with one another. I want you to be sympathetic, love as brothers, be compassionate, be humble. Do not repay evil with evil or insult with insult. So these are actions. These are how we're going to behave. This is how our heart's going to look. I want you to not repay evil or insult with insult, but with blessing, because to this you were called, so that you may inherit a blessing. Every time we choose love over hate, kindness over harshness, empathy over insensitivity, truth-telling over lying, forgiveness over grudge-bearing. Every time we choose a polite spirit over rudeness, silence over slander, wisdom over foolishness, purity over immorality, generosity over stinginess, we delight the heart of God and add to our heavenly portfolio. That's good stuff. So it's really about choices. It's about where our treasure is. I mean, I love the power of the Sermon on the Mount and how Jesus is addressing all kinds of different issues. But his section on focus and heart and vision and goals and this idea that if our eyes have light, we'll be able to truly see. And how many times Jesus looked at the Pharisees and Sadducees and said, you bunch of blind guides. You walk through this life totally blind. And he says, hey, don't follow those guys. They can't see. A blind man leading a blind man will fall into a what? A ditch or a pit. Right? They'll fall into something. Why? Because you're following blindly. Open your eyes and see that I have a different vision for you than the rest of the world. Every time we show an act of compassion, we build up treasure in heaven. Every time we express Jesus' love to others or show acts of kindness, we are storing up treasures in heaven. It's our actions. It's our lifestyle. Those are the treasures, because they're not from this earth. It's not the same thing. And how we work with other people and love on other people and help them along the way to heaven, we put these treasures in our heavenly portfolio. It's interesting to me that one of the greatest tools against greed is contentment. Star's not here this morning. I could not think of this book last week when I was teaching class, and for the life of me, I did eight lessons on it. We taught it in class. It's one of my favorite books of all time, and I totally drew a blank. But it's the book Overcoming Overload. It was Stephen Mary Farrar that wrote the book, and that's what I was trying to remember last week. And Karen was, I think Star was leaning over to Karen and said, Google it, find it out. He's going to go crazy, because I was like, I can't believe I can't remember the name of that book. But anyway, it's called Overcoming Overload. And it's a book that was written 20 years ago, and it's written based on the Sermon on the Mount, this section, about finding where your treasures are and how to find this contentment and understanding contentment. And he says in the book that comparison is the enemy of contentment. Comparison is the enemy of contentment. See, Satan's job is to not, you know, he would love for us to never think about heaven, but when we compare everything we have on this earth to everyone else's stuff, you know, thankfulness is the enemy of contentment, or is the enemy of, or is on the same side, I'm sorry. Thankfulness and contentment, that's why I put this in here. Because, I mean, at Christmas time, at Thanksgiving time, we start thinking about a little bit more family, and we start thinking about things that matter the most, hopefully. That's what they're supposed to be about. But the enemy of contentment, the enemy of thankfulness, is comparison. I've said this a billion times in my life. It's like, when I compare my stuff to their stuff and my stuff's not as good as their stuff, all of a sudden I'm not happy. I'm not content. I got to have something better. And so where is our comparison when it comes to treasures? Oftentimes we're looking this way instead of looking this way. I want treasures in heaven. And Jesus says your treasures need to be in heaven. It's important for us to focus on the light rather than the darkness, our vision toward Christ instead of stuff. 2 Corinthians 4:18. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. Now let me say this. I always have to put the asterisk. He's not talking about having possessions. He's literally not saying, you know, all rich people will go to hell. It's not what he's saying. He's saying it's our priorities with that which we have. It's called greed. I read this. You can be on food stamps and be more sinful than your end with. You can be on food stamps and be more sinful through your envy, jealousy, covetousness, and desire for material possessions than a millionaire who is generous and finds hope in God. I like that statement. Because that is what Jesus is saying. Jesus blessed so many different people throughout Scripture because their priorities and their focus were on Him. And when they kept their focus and their priorities on Him, He continued to bless them. What He's saying is, where are your treasures? Each individual in this room have a different viewpoint of their treasures. Whether they're on earth or in heaven, we all have a different outlook in regards to that. So we need to find peace in our own hearts. Look at Colossians 3:15-17 as we conclude this morning. I appreciate Bill reading that for us this morning. This is what Paul is trying to say to the Colossians. This is Colossians chapter 3. I call it the holy living chapter. He's talking about how to live a wholesome, beautiful life that gives God glory in all things. And so he says near the conclusion, or more toward the middle part of the conclusion, he says, let the peace, the peace of Christ, this calmness, this peace, let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body you are called to peace. And be thankful. Thankful. Let the message of Christ dwell among you richly as you teach and you admonish one another with all wisdom through psalms and hymns and songs from the Spirit, singing to God with gratitude in your hearts. How many of you guys ever sing out of just pure delight? I mean, you just have that moment, you just burst into song, right? And sometimes people look at you. Karen used the restroom. We stopped and got gas and we used the restroom. And the music playing, I was hearing it too. I was like, what a weird choice of song. But I was like, I was singing along, and I didn't realize there was a guy in the back. I thought I was the only one in the bathroom. Do you remember what it was? Old MacDonald. Oh, it was like this orchestration. There was band and banjo and chorus. Karen's like, what? I was like, why would you put that song on the speaker? But I was singing it, and then we both got in the car, and I'm like, Old MacDonald. And I was like, oh, great. I'm going to sing this song the rest of the way home. Huh? It was a little girl on her phone, and I could hear it in the men's restroom. We could hear it in the girls' bathroom. And I was like, Old MacDonald had a hee-haw. And the guy comes out, and I went, oh, hey. Guy looked at me like, he goes, well, that's an interesting choice of song. I said, yeah, that's what I was thinking. And so kind of, I'm sure I turned red-faced. I'm not sure if I did or not. But anyway, I was having my own moment. And so we walked out, and Karen walked out of the girls at about the same time. And I went, well, that's a cool song. And she goes, you know what that was? It was a little girl on her phone playing Old MacDonald. I mean, it was loud. It was in the whole store. And so, yeah, the rest of the trip, there's a couple of times I was thinking of all the different animals I would do in Old MacDonald. So anyway, so singing to God with gratitude in your hearts. This is this joyousness, this peacefulness of knowing, hey, I've got this relationship with God. It's a peaceful feeling. You know, I've got this peaceful, easy feeling. We sing that beautiful song too. And whatever you do, he says, whatever you do, whether it's in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through Him because of our blessings. Let's be thankful. That's what Thanksgiving is all about. And so all of this joy and this peace comes as a result of laying up treasures in heaven. But I'll tell you what, when you read the Sermon on the Mount and read other sections of Scripture, it's amazing how many times the worry and the stress and the anxiety and the heartbreak comes because of things here and the worry about those things here. Focus on the eternal. Focus on that which is permanent. And that includes us. How many of us are going to be, I don't know how God's going to do heaven, but we were just talking about how cool heaven's going to be. And I don't know how many of us get to do what we do and do it together if we live in the same apartment complex or how God's going to do what God's going to do. But I think it's just a blessing and a joy to think about eternal things. So let's be content with what God has given us and thankful this morning for his unfailing love.